He turned toward the great hall and described in the air an enigmatic sign with the fingers of his right hand. In answer to the sign, a hueless mist came down from the high roof and hid the room like a falling curtain for a brief interim. There was a babble of sounds, confused and muffled, beyond the curtain, and a crying of voices faint, as if with distance. Then dreadfully, the vapor rolled away, and Zutella saw that the laden tables had gone. In the wide inner spaces of the columns, his palace inmates, the chamberlains, the eunuchs, the courtiers and oledisks, and all the others, lay trussed with thongs on the floor, like so many fowls of glorious plumage. Above them, in time to a music made by the lyrists and flautist of the necromancer, a troop of skeletons pirouetted with light clickings of their toe-bones, and a rout of mummies bowed stiffly, and others of Nomura's creatures moved with mysterious caperings. To and fro they leapt on the bodies of the emperor's people, in the paces of an evil saraband. At every step they grew taller and heavier, till the salt-ant mummies were as the mummies of Anakim, and the skeletons were boned as colossi. And louder the music rose, drowning the faint cries of Zutella's people. And huger still became the dancers, towering far into vaulted shadow among the vast columns, with thudding feet that wrought thunder in the room, and those thereon they danced were as grapes trampled for a vintage in autumn, and the floor ran deep with a sanguine must. As a man drowning in a noisome, night-bound fen, the emperor heard the voice of Nomura.
"It would seem that my dancers please you not, so now I shall present you a most royal spectacle. Arise and follow me, for the spectacle is one that requires an empire for its stage."
Zutella and Obexa rose from their chairs in the fashion of nightwalkers. Giving no backward glance at their ministering phantoms, or the hall where the dancers bounded, they followed Nomura to an alcove beyond the altar of Thassadon. Thence, by the upward-coiling stairways, they came at length to a broad high balcony that faced Zutella's palace and looked forth above the city roofs toward the bourne of sunset. It seemed that several hours had gone by in that hellish feasting and entertainment, for the day was near to its close, and the sun, which had fallen from sight behind the imperial palace, was barring the vast heavens with bloody rays.
"Behold,
Yakam!"
said Nomura, adding a strange vocable to which the stone of the edifice resounded like a beaten gong. The balcony pitched a little, and Zutella, looking over the balustrade, beheld the roofs of Umaos lessen and sink beneath him. It seemed that the balcony flew skyward to a prodigious height, and he peered down across the domes of his own palace, upon the houses, the tilled fields, and the desert beyond, and the huge sun brought low on the desert's verge. And Zutella grew giddy, and the chill airs of the upper heavens blew upon him. But Nomura spoke another word, and the balcony ceased to ascend.
"Secret house!"
"Look well on the empire that was yours, but shall be yours no longer," said the necromancer.
Then, with arms outstretched toward the sunset, he called aloud the 12 names that were perdition to utter, and after them, the tremendous invocation.
Ganana, Padambis, Divombra, Thungis, Furiator, Avaor Abomum.
Instantly, it seemed that great ebon clouds of thunder beetled against the sun. Lining the horizon, the clouds took the form of colossal monsters with heads and members somewhat resembling those of stallions, rearing terribly, they trode down the sun like an extinguished ember, and racing, as if in some hippodrome of Titans, they rose higher and vaster, coming towards Eumaeus. Deep, calamitous rumblings preceded them, and the earth shook visibly, till Zotella saw that these were not immaterial clouds, but actual living forms that had come forward to tread the world in macrocosmic vastness. Throwing their shadows for many leagues before them, the coursers charged, as if devil-ridden, into Xylac, and their feet descended, like falling mountain crags, upon far oases and towns of the outer wastes. Like a many-turreted storm they came, and it seemed that the world shrank gulfward, tilting beneath the weight. Still as a man enchanted into marble, Zotella stood and beheld the ruining that was wrought on his empire. And closer drew the gigantic stallions, racing with inconceivable speed, and louder was the thundering of their footfalls that now began to blot the green fields and fruited orchards lying for many miles to the west of Eumaeus. And the shadow of the stallions climbed like an evil gloom of eclipse, till it covered Eumaeus. And looking up, the emperor saw their eyes, halfway between earth and zenith, like baleful suns that glare down from soaring cumuli. Then, in the thickening gloom, above that insupportable thunder, he heard the voice of Namara, crying in mad triumph.
Know, Zotella, that I have called up the coursers of Famagorgos, lord of the abyss, and the coursers will tread your empire down, even as your palfrey trode and trampled in former times a beggar boy named Narthos. And learn also that I, Namora, was that boy.
And the eyes of Namora, filled with the vainglory of madness and bale, burned like malign, disastrous stars at the hour of their culmination. To Zotella, wholly mazed with the horror and tumult, the necromancer's words were no more than shrill, shrieked overtones of the tempest of doom, and he understood them not. Tremendously, with a rending of staunch-built roofs and an instant cleavage and crumbling down of mighty masonries, the hooves descended upon Eumaeus. Fair temple domes were pashed like shells of the Haliotis, and haughty mansions were broken and stamped into the ground even as gourds. And house by house the city was trampled flat, with a crashing as of worlds beaten into chaos. Far below, in the darkening streets, men and camel fled like scurrying emits, but could not escape. And implacably, the hooves rose and fell, till ruin was upon half the city, and night was over all. The palace of Zotella was trodden under, and now the forelegs of the coursers loomed level with Namura's balcony, and their heads towered awfully above. It seemed that they would rear and trample down the necromancer's house, but at that moment they parted to left and right, and a dolorous glimmering came from the low sunset, and the coursers went on, treading under them that portion of Eumaeus which lay to the eastward. And Zotella and Obexa and Namura looked down on the city's fragments as on a shard-shrewn midden, and heard the cataclysmic clamor of the hooves departing towards eastern Xylac.
"Now that was a goodly spectacle,"
quoteth Namura. Then, turning to the emperor, he added malignly,
"Think not that I have done with thee, however, or that doom is yet consummate."
It seemed that the balcony had fallen to its former elevation, which was still a lofty vantage above the sharded ruins, and Namura plucked the emperor by the arm and led him from the balcony to an inner chamber, while Obexa followed mutely. The emperor's heart was crushed within him by the trampling of such calamities, and despair weighed upon him like a foul incubus on the shoulders of a man lost in some land of accursed night. And he knew not that he had been parted from Obexa on the threshold of the chamber, and that certain of Namura's creatures, appearing like shadows, had compelled the girl to go downward with them by the stairs, and had stifled her outcries with their rotten cerements as they went. The chamber was one that Namura used for his most unhallowed rites and alchemies. The rays of the lamps that illumined it were saffron-red, like the spilt ichor of devils. And they flowed on aludels and crucibles and black anathors and alembitics, whereof the purpose was hardly to be named by mortal man. The sorcerer heated, in one of the alembics, a dark liquid full of star-cold lights, while Zotella looked on unheeding. And when the liquid bubbled and sent forth a spiral vapor, Namura distilled it into goblets of gold-rimmed iron, and gave one of the goblets to Zotella, and retained the other himself. And he said to Zotella, with a stern imperative voice,
"I bid thee quaff this liquor."
Zotella, fearing that the draught was poison, hesitated, and the necromancer regarded him with a lethal gaze, and cried loudly,
"Fearest thou to do as I?"
And therewith he set the goblet to his lips. So the emperor drank the draught, constrained as if by the bidding of some angel of death, and a darkness fell upon his senses. But ere the darkness grew complete, he saw that Namura had drained his own goblet. Then, in unspeakable agonies, it seemed that the emperor died, and his soul floated free, and again he saw the chamber, though with bodiless eyes. And discarnate, he stood in the saffron-crimson light, with his body lying as if dead on the floor beside him, and near it the prone body of Namura and the two fallen goblets. Standing thus, he beheld a strange thing, for anon his own body stirred and arose, while that of the necromancer remained still as death. And Zotella looked at his own lineaments, and his figure in its short cloak of azure samite, sewn with black pearls and balas rubies, and the body lived before him, though with eyes that held a darker fire and a deeper evil than was their wont. Then, without corporeal ears, Zotella heard the figure speak, and the voice was the strong, arrogant voice of Namura, saying,
"Follow me, O houseless phantom, and do in all things as I enjoin thee."
Like an unseen shadow, Zotella followed the wizard, and the twain went downward by the stairs to the great banquet hall. They came to the altar of Thassadon, and the mailed image, with the seven horse-skull lamps burning before it as formerly. Upon the altar, Zotella's beloved leman, Obexa, who alone of all women had power to stir his sated heart, was lying bound with thongs at Thassadon's feet. But the hall beyond was deserted, and nothing remained of that Saturnalia of doom except the fruit of the treading, which had flowed together in dark pools among the columns. Namura, using the emperor's body in all ways for his own, paused before the dark Eidolon, and he said to the spirit of Zotella,
"Be imprisoned in this image, without power to free thyself or to stir in any wise."
Being wholly obedient to the will of the necromancer, the soul of Zotella was embodied in the statue, and he felt its cold, gigantic armor about him like a straight sarcophagus, and he peered forth immovably from the bleak eyes that were overhung by its carven helmet. Gazing thus, he beheld the change that had come on his own body through the sorcerer's possession of Namura, for below the short azure cloak, the legs had turned suddenly to the hind legs of a black stallion, with hooves that glowed redly as if heated by infernal fires, And even as Zotella watched this prodigy, the hooves glowed white and incandescent, and fumes mounted from the floor beneath them. Then, on the black altar, the hybrid abomination came pacing haughtily toward Obexa, and smoking footprints appeared behind it as it came. Pausing beside the girl, who lay supine and helpless, regarding it with eyes that were pools of frozen horror, it raised one glowing hoof and set the hoof on her naked bosom between the small breast cups of golden filigree begemmed with rubies. And the girl screamed beneath that atrocious treading as the soul of one newly damned might scream in hell. And the hoof glared with intolerable brilliance, as if freshly plucked from a furnace wherein the weapons of demons were forged. At that moment, in the cowed and crushed and sodden shade of the Emperor Zotella, close locked within the adamantine image, there awoke the manhood that had slumbered unaroused before the ruining of his empire and the trampling of his retinue. Immediately, a great abhorrence and a high wrath were alive in his soul, and mightily he longed for his own right arm to serve him, and a sword in his right hand. Then it seemed that a voice spoke within him, chill and bleak and awful, and as if uttered inwardly by the statue itself. And the voice said,
"I am Thassa, Lord of the seven hells beneath the earth, and the hells of man's heart above the earth, which are seven times seven. For the moment, O Zotella, my power is become thine for the sake of a mutual vengeance. Be one in all ways with the statue that has my likeness, even as the soul is one with the flesh. Behold, there is a mace of adamite in thy right hand. Lift up the mace and smite."
Zotella was aware of a great power within him, and giant thews about him that thrilled with the power and responded agilely to his will. He felt in his mailed right hand the haft of the huge, spiky-headed mace, and though the mace was beyond the lifting of any man in mortal flesh, it seemed no more than a goodly weight to Zotella. Then, rearing the mace like a warrior in battle, he struck down, with one crashing blow, the impious thing that wore his own rightful flesh, united with the legs and hooves of a demon courser. And the thing crumpled swiftly down, and lay, with the brain spreading pulpily from its shattered skull on the shining jet. And the legs twitched a little, and then grew still, and the hooves glowed from a fiery blinding white to the redness of red-hot iron, cooling slowly. For a space there was no sound, other than the shrill screaming of the girl Obexa, mad with pain and the terror of those prodigies which she had beheld. Then, in the soul of Zotella, grown sick with that screaming, the chill, awful voice of Thassadon spoke again.
"Go free, for there is nothing more for thee to do."
So the spirit of Zotella passed from the image of Thassadon, and found in the wide air the freedom of nothingness and oblivion. But the end was not yet for Namura, whose mad, arrogant soul had been loosened from Zotella's body by the blow, and had returned darkly, not in the manner planned by the magician, to its own body, lying in the room of accursed rites and forbidden transmigrations. There, Namura awoke anon, with a dire confusion in his mind, and a partial forgetfulness, for the curse of Thassadon was upon him now, because of his blasphemies. Nothing was clear in his thought except a malign, exorbitant longing for revenge, but the reason thereof and the object were as doubtful shadows. And, still prompted by that obscure animus, he arose, and girding to his side an enchanted sword with runic sapphires and opals in the hilt, he descended the stairs, and came again to the altar of Thasadon, where the mailed statue stood as impassive as before, with the poised mace in its immovable right hand, and below it on the altar the double sacrifice. A veil of weird darkness was upon the senses of Nomura, and he saw not the stallion-legged horror that lay dead with slowly blackening hooves, and he heard not the moaning of the girl Ubexa, who still lived beside it. But his eyes were drawn by the diamond mirror that was upheld in the claws of black iron basilisks beyond the altar. And going to the mirror, he saw therein a face that he knew no longer for his own. And because his eyes were shadowed and his brain filled with the shifting webs of delusion, he took the face for that of the Emperor Zotella. Insatiable as hell's own flame, his old hatred rose within him, and he drew the enchanted sword and began to hew therewith at the reflection. Sometimes, because of the curse laid upon him and the impious transmigration which he had performed, he thought himself Zotella warring with the necromancer, and again, in the shiftings of his madness, he was Nomura smiting at the Emperor. And then, without name, he fought a nameless foe. And soon the sorcerous blade, though tempered with formidable spells, was broken close to the hilt, and Nomura beheld the image still unharmed. Then, howling aloud the half-forgotten runes of a most tremendous curse, made invalid through his own forgettings, he hammered still with the heavy sword hilt on the mirror, till the runic sapphires and opals cracked in the hilt and fell away at his feet in little fragments. Ubexa, dying on the altar, saw Nomura battling with his image, and the spectacle moved her to mad laughter like the pealing of bells of ruined crystal. And above her laughter, and above the cursings of Nomura, there came anon, like the rumblings of a swift-driven storm, the thunder made by the macrocosmic stallion of Tham-O-Gorgas, returning gulfward through Xylac over Umos, to trample down the one house that they had spared aforetime. This is the end of The Dark Eidolon from Tales of Zotique by Clark Ashton Smith.